नाहं ममेति भावोऽयम् पुरुषे व्यवधीयते पुरुषे व्यवधीयते यावद्बुद्धिमनोक्षार्थ गुणव्यूहो ह्यनारिमान् गुणव्यूहो ह्यनारिमान् Na, not, aham, I, mama, mine, iti, das, bhavaha, consciousness, I am, this, purushe, in the living entity, vyavadhiyate, is separated, yavat, so long, buddhi, intelligence, mana, mind, aksha, senses, artha, sense objects, guna, of the material qualities, vyuha, a manifestation, he, anybody knows? Certainly, anadiman, the subtle body, existing since time immemorial. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. As long as there exists the subtle material body composed of intelligence, mind, senses, sense objects, and the reactions of the material qualities, the consciousness of false identification and its relative object, the gross body, exists as well. And the purport. The desires in the subtle body of mind, intelligence, and ego cannot be fulfilled without a gross body composed of the material elements earth, water, air, fire, and ether. When the gross material body is not manifest, the living entity cannot factually act in the modes of material nature. In this verse, it is clearly explained that the subtle activities of the mind and intelligence continue due to the sufferings and enjoyments of the living entity's subtle body. The consciousness of material identification, such as I and mine, still continues because such consciousness has been extended from time immemorial. However, when one transfers to the spiritual world by virtue of understanding Krishna consciousness, the actions and reactions of both gross and subtle bodies no longer bother the spirit soul. And I read the translation again. As long as there exists the subtle material body composed of intelligence, mind, senses, sense objects, and the reactions of the material qualities, the consciousness of false identification and its relative object, the gross body, exists as well. Ammagyanti mirandhasya gyananjana chalakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya mano bhishtam sthapitam yena bhutale svayam rupa karamayam dadati svapadantikam shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda shri advaita gadadhara shri vasadi gaura bhakta vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. One time Srila Prabhupada was glorified by a famous yogi who had come to the West and who has started to teach Ashtanga yoga and some meditation, and he's attracted a lot of followers through that. And this yogi, he was glorifying Srila Prabhupada by saying, oh, you know, you have come to the West and you have brought this Krishna consciousness to the West, and I know actually this is the best thing you could have brought, and I know it's the right thing. And you have so many followers as well, even though you're preaching such high standards, like rules and regulations people have to follow, and still this, you're not compromising the message, and still you're having so many followers, and people do what you tell them to do. And this yogi was glorifying Prabhupada for like 5 minutes. And usually the way Srila Prabhupada would respond to that, he would just humbly say thank you and like accept. But then this particular yogi, he chastised him. He was like, you know that Krishna consciousness is the best. You are cheating people of the real knowledge. Just because you're compromising, you're afraid that they won't understand and you will not get enough followers. So he was actually very displeased with this yogi. And so in this way, we can see Srila Prabhupada, he wouldn't compromise the message in his preaching. Maybe he would adjust the time, place, and circumstances, but he would never compromise the message of devotional service, the process. And so in a similar way, Narada Muni here also, he's preaching to King Prachina Barhishad, and he's explaining in this particular chapter, he's explaining the very complex analogy that he has given in the previous few chapters, and this has been going on for a while already. The story of Puranjana, the living entity who's entrapped in the city of nine gates, and we've heard all about the allegorical story here, the way how Narada Muni preaches to King Prachina Barhishad, and it's in a very complex, in a very complicated way how Narada Muni is preaching to him. And because Narada Muni understands the mindset of Prachina Barhishad, he's very complicated. He's a king, he has performed so many sacrifices, fire sacrifices, and he's very entangled in material life, and so he has to find a very sophisticated way of grabbing, attracting his mind and bringing it to Krishna. And so Narada Muni, we see in the different instances in his preaching mission, he's very expert in doing that. Like Mrigari, for instance, he didn't speak a lot of philosophy, but he just gave him a few instructions, and immediately, like, he would become a devotee. Dhruva Maharaj, Narada Muni understood his mentality as a kshatriya, so he would challenge him. So Dhruva Maharaj would actually take up the challenge, and he would become a devotee. A pure devotee. And Prahlad Maharaj, so many different situations where Narada Muni very expertly describes the philosophy. Maybe he's changing the circumstance or the way how he presents it, but he doesn't change the essence. And so also Srila Prabhupada is very expertly presented the essence of devotional service to us. And it's also said that if we can come up with so many different preaching strategies and giving seminars and retreats and yoga and so many different ways on our concerts, so many different ways how we can preach, but if we then at some point don't come to the essence of giving actually the process of devotional service, then we actually take, not just we deprive the person of spiritual life, but also we may get contaminated by the other person's concepts, because we are actually taking their association, we are not giving association to the other person. So Narada Muni, he's kind of setting the example for us on how to become very expert preachers by understanding the mindset of the person we try to reach out to. And now in this chapter, Narada Muni is kind of explaining the different, or summarizing, it's almost like a summary of the previous few chapters. He has described the body, how the body works, how the mind works, the gross body, the subtle body. And now in this verse he's summarizing, or he's explaining that as long as we still have a subtle body, we will still have a gross body as well. Because the subtle body, everything we are cultivating in our subtle body, all the desires, the impressions that we put into our subtle body, that will eventually lead to taking birth in another gross body. So as long as the subtle body exists, we also have a gross material body. And earlier in this chapter, Srila Prabhupada has explained that the gross body can take different forms. Either you can have a one-legged, or two-legged, or three-legged, or four-legged, or many-legged, or a body without any legs. And so he said that a one-legged body would refer to the body of a ghost. Ghosts are considered to be, ghosts are known to be, to walk on one leg. So that then also there's a two-legged body would be the human being, a three-legged body would be an old person, because they need a stick to walk. And a four-legged body would be an animal body. And a many-legged body would also refer to animal bodies, like some insects, they have many legs. And a body without any legs, Prabhupada explains, that refers to serpents. And I'm sure there's other animals, you know, like worms and snails, they don't have legs. So there's different types of bodies, gross material bodies we can accept due to our mind, due to our mental impressions and desires that we're cultivating in this life. But then the more important part really is the mind. And Prabhupada, or in this chapter, the mind has been analyzed in different ways. It's explained that this is the, going back to the analogy of the chariot, this is called the 11th attendant, or the commander of all the senses. So the mind is considered to be the chief commander who is directing all the other senses. And he's the leader of the senses. He's also said to be Brihad Bala, or he's very powerful. The mind is very powerful. And Prabhupada also gives the analogy of having a good or a bad manager. If you have an estate, and you have a really good manager, then things go well, and you know there will be prosperity. And if you have a bad manager, then things will go not so well, and then you may get bankrupt, and so many problems will come. So in a similar way, the senses, if they have a good manager, then they're properly engaged, and you can make actually progress in material and in spiritual life as well. Whereas if the senses are not properly managed, if the mind becomes a bad manager, and he doesn't have good control over the senses, then even in our material lives won't be successful, our spiritual lives won't be successful as well. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that the mind can be either one's friend or one's enemy. Shri Shri Radha Gopinath Ki Jai. And also, Rupa Goswami, he has given us various scriptures on which he says, emphasizes the importance of controlling the mind. Nektar's instruction starts off with a very important verse. Vacha vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udaru pasta vegam. Etandigan yuvishaheta dhira, sarvam apimam pridivim sashishyat. So if one can control the urges of the mind and of the senses, then one is allowed or able to take disciples all over the world. So that's the definition of a Goswami. Prabhupada stresses that in the preface there, and also in the Nectar of Devotion. As Bhakti Shastri students here. A little reminder. The importance of becoming a Goswami. Goswami means somebody who is Goswami. Go means the senses, and Swami means the master. Somebody who's controlling, able to control the senses. And Prabhupada says that the instructions that we receive from our acharyas, the books that they have given us, the process of Krishna consciousness, all that is meant to become Goswamis. We should elevate ourselves to the position of a Goswami, which means to be able to control our mind and our senses. Now, as I already mentioned, the mind, or the functions of the mind, are thinking, feeling, willing. First we contemplate the sense objects. Then through that we develop feelings towards the sense object. And then when there's some feelings towards the sense object, we want to enjoy the sense object. So there's a cycle described in Bhagavad Gita, the thinking, feeling, willing stage. And then once we act upon the desires, then habits are formed. So we keep acting in a certain way, and through that, more impressions are put in the mind that we want to enjoy. And through that, we create desires eventually that will lead us to get another body. And also the bodily actions that we perform are responsible for our further thoughts. So there's a correlation between the subtle and the gross body. We think about something, we act upon it, and as we act upon it, our mental impressions are being reinforced. So there's a correlation between what we do and what we think and what we desire. And as long as we still think we can arrange our material situation in a way that it's fulfilling our desires on a material platform, Prabhupada says, then we are no better than an animal looking for water in a desert. There's no water in a desert, as we know, and so an animal looking for water in a desert is a pretty useless task. So Prabhupada says it's a waste of one's life. And we are sacrificing our lives or valuable human form, as Prabhupada always points out, in pursuit of something that's actually not worth pursuing because there's no benefit in pursuing. And in an act of devotion, we've just studied that Prabhupada says there in the purport that the loving propensity of the living entity, or the propensity, the desire to be happy in this material world, is misplaced. And this is the real problem of human life. He says that the real object of our worship, of our love, of our sense gratification, should be in trying to please Krishna. This is the real goal of human life. And as long as we don't do that, we'll always feel a lack in our hearts. We won't be satisfied, we won't be happy, we won't be fully fulfilled in our lives. And so Chidananda Maharaj sometimes gives the analogy of the Krishna-shaped hole in the heart. There's a hole in our hearts which is Krishna-shaped, and then we try to put so many different objects in there, houses and cars and relationships and fame and prestige and money, and I'm sure you can think of so many more things. Food, chocolate, maybe some of us. We try to fill this heart to become satisfied, to become happy, but actually it's not going to truly fulfill us. And unless we put Krishna back, Krishna is in our hearts, but unless we reconnect with Krishna in our hearts, we won't be fully satisfied in this world. And every attempt to try to be satisfied or try to create a better material facility will actually result in more problems. Prahlad Maharaj has pointed this out and he was saying that whatever solution you find for a material problem will cause greater material problems. And we see this in so many ways, like for instance Prabhupada talks about the car. The car has been invented. It's great, you know, we can move around and we can drive 1 hour, 2 hours to work and get jammed in traffic jams. But there's so many problems going along with, for instance, just the inventions of cars. There's resources, natural resources, oil needs to be extracted with that. There's so many problems involved. I guess you're all familiar with the recent whatever oil spills that happened, some of which in whatever Gulf of Mexico, one of the biggest oil spills in the history of North America ever. And there's so many like environmental problems. We are causing so much difficulties to species, animals. There's so many endangered species that are being threatened by our attempts to exploit natural resources. So, okay, going back to the car example, of course it's just one thing what we need, for instance, oil for. But then also there's so many other problems. There's traffic jams, distress, so many more problems that are being created by certain inventions. And I'm not saying that that material progress is bad. Prabhupada also didn't condemn that. He said it's good, you know, if we can use it for Krishna. And here the process of yukta vairagya comes in. We want to use whatever there is. Material advancement is good if you can use it in service of in serving Krishna. If you don't get more distracted, if you don't get more disturbed. But then also the principle of yukta vairagya is purity. Purity is the force. Utility is the principle. Purity is the force means we want to keep that in mind, that whatever we use is for Krishna. It's not for our sense gratification. It's not to justify, I need this whatever little machine or this facility in order for my preaching to be successful, in order for my service. I really need this specific situation for my service. But actually, really, it's because we want it and we use Krishna as an excuse to get something that we need or that we want. And how many times has this happened to us? At least then we should be honest and say, okay, yeah, I need that and I really would want to have that, and okay, not blame Krishna that he needs it for us to serve him. So this idea of Yukta Varaga, we can use anything, almost anything, of course within certain parameters, anything in the material world to serve Krishna, and it all comes from Krishna, and so in that way it's neutral, it just depends on how we use it. Perception is very much based on our consciousness. So if we want to use something for our own sense gratification, then we're just exploiting Krishna's resources. And to overcome this consciousness, Narada Muni here, he suggests, go and glorify Krishna and hear from devotees the glories of Krishna and devotional service. And one example that illustrates nicely the idea of material objects, they can be used in different ways, is one story from Ramayana. Bharat Maharaj, he gave Vibhishan a needle, and Vibhishan was living in Sri Lanka, in the island of Lanka, and he had these big palaces, a lot of opulences, and the only metal that existed in Lanka was gold. They didn't have any other, like they didn't have iron or like any other like lower class metals. So when Bharat, Ram's brother, gave this needle to Vibhishan, he was very happy because this needle was an iron needle. And for us, an iron needle wouldn't be like super exciting. But if you only had gold around you, then an iron needle might be very exciting. So we can see how relative material opulences are. So if you have something abundantly, then you don't really value it anymore. As soon as something becomes very rare, then you want to have it. Then it becomes more valuable and more attractive, more exciting to get it. But then the story continues that Vibhishan, apparently he comes to worship Lord Ranganath regularly, and so he brings a huge flower basket, a basket like his size. Vibhishan is very tall. So he brings a huge basket of flowers with him. He offers it to Ranganath, and one Brahmin priest, he was observing that, and he wanted to hide in the flower basket when Vibhishan goes back. And so he hid in the flower basket, and Vibhishan was very happy. He was like, oh, okay, yeah, you want to come? Sure. And so Vibhishan was very happy, and he wanted to give him something that he thought was very valuable, because he saw this dedication of this Brahmana. And so what did Vibhishan give him? The needle, right, the iron needle. And this Brahmana was so disappointed because this was this poor Brahmana. He knew Vibhishan had so many opulences, and he thought he would maybe get something more opulent, whatever, some gold or something, which wasn't the problem for Vibhishan. And then so Vibhishan thought, oh, I give him something really valuable and give him this iron needle, and this Brahmana said, that's useless. What should I do with an iron needle? So we see, according to our particular situation, our particular circumstances in life, we value different material objects differently. So it is a very temporary, very relative situation, which we may not want to take too seriously, considering the temporary nature. So in order not to develop another gross body because of these subtle impressions, Srila Prabhupada suggests that we perform devotional service. And there's a lot of like purificatory processes that would help us to become purified, that would help us to become peaceful, perhaps, or sense-controlled, or develop good qualities. Like, for instance, when people practice yoga, they get a lot of very good benefits from that, or just pious activities, yajna, sacrifices. You get a lot of pious results, and you become purified by those activities. But the root cause of our misidentification is ignorance. You're not actually accepting that we are eternal servants of Krishna. Krishna das Kaviraj says in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Jivera Smarupai Krishnera Nityadas, the Jiva is an eternal servant of Krishna. So as long as we don't accept that, whatever other purificatory rites, performances we do, eventually it will bring us to take another birth. Because it's based on ignorance. It's not based on a proper understanding. And it's the same problem also with the, for instance, impersonalists or people that are very fond of practicing renunciation. And they may be very renounced, a lot more renounced than maybe devotees are. But their renunciation is based on misidentification. Their renunciation is based on an understanding, I'm the controller, I'm the doer, I'm the proprietor, I'm the enjoyer. So I can renounce, no problem. But then if you understand something doesn't belong to you, then you also understand that you can't actually renounce it. So it's much better than to use it in Krishna's service instead of artificially saying, oh, no, I don't need that. In our class, I was acting this out a little bit. I was taking Susanna's feedback, and I told her, okay, if I go out of class, I'm not going to take your beatbag with me. And everybody was like, what? What is she trying to say here? but the idea is that if I'm trying to renounce something artificially, this is what I'm doing. Okay, I'm taking somebody else's possession, I'm taking Krishna's possessions, and I'm saying, okay, Krishna, I'm not going to use it. I'm not going to take it. But Krishna's like, it's mine anyway, you know? So what are you renouncing? So the real thing that we want to renounce is our false identifications, our false ego, the understanding that we think we are the proprietor. So it all belongs to Krishna, and then we can use it freely in his service. And this idea of being Krishna's servant and acknowledging Krishna being the proprietor and the enjoyer, this will really help us not to develop another gross body and another subtle body as well. And also just one last point that I'd like to make here is that even striving for purity, because Prabhupada says that we need to become purified of our material identification, but striving for purity separately from Krishna consciousness is also not going to help us. Even if we practice devotional service and we pray for purity, we may be praying for purity for millions of lifetimes, because how pure can we become? It's like trying to clean a coal mine. If you have coal, you know, it's like black, and it's always going to be black. And there's no way how you can actually clean it out. So in a similar way, we have so much baggage, so many impressions in our mind from so many lifetimes, so many desires, that if we would just focus on cleaning those or becoming purified of those and becoming very peaceful perhaps, it'll eventually lead to frustration, because in the material world there's always disturbances. So then we may be thinking, oh, I'm very pure, I'm very renounced, I'm very peaceful, I can meditate for hours. And then suddenly there's a sense object comes in front of our senses, and we get totally disturbed, and we think, oh my God, you know, what happens? And we're just thrown off and caught off guard, as they say. And then we may get frustrated and even leave the process, because we think the process doesn't work. But we don't understand that it's not the process that doesn't work, it's our motivation that was wrong. Our motivation is to become a humble servant of Krishna, whatever happens, whatever situation he wants to put me in. And that's a very safe situation to be in, because then whatever happens, you can always take shelter of Krishna and try to pray to him and see, okay, Krishna, please, you know, help me with this situation. Whereas when we think, oh, you know, we want to become pure, and then we're not pure, then we do get frustrated. So it's better to humbly keep practicing devotional service, even though impurities may come up, and maybe at least it keeps us humble. And in a humble mood, then we can continue worshipping Radha Gopinath. And one story that exemplifies that is, for instance, when Lord Chaitanya was, in the beginning in Navadvip, Lord Chaitanya had these kirtans in Srivastava's house. And there was only a certain number of people were allowed. Only the very close associates of Lord Chaitanya were allowed in because they were devotees of the Lord. They could understand his mood. And so they would have these ecstatic kirtans every day, and then there was this one brahmachari. He had heard about the kirtans. And he was a very renowned brahmachari, only drank milk. And so he wanted to go, he wanted to enter the kirtan, and he begged Srivas Thakur, please, 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 let me join the kirtan. I'm so renounced. I'm not interested in sense gratification at all. And please, this must be good qualification to see Lord Chaitanya. And so Srivas was, okay, you hide in a cupboard, and then we have kirtan. And then Lord Chaitanya starts his kirtan, but he doesn't feel the ecstasy that he would usually feel. So he asks Srivas, what's happening? Something is wrong. I can't enter the mood of kirtan as I usually do. And then Srivas Thakur, he's trying like, there's somebody hiding in the cupboard. This is brahmachari, he really wanted to join your kirtan. And then Lord Chaitanya gets very upset, and Srivas Thakur is like, no, but he's very renounced, he's a very good brahmachari, he's really following properly, he's only drinking milk. And then Lord Chaitanya gets very angry, and he's like, just because somebody is only drinking milk, the person cannot understand the mood of the kirtan, of worshipping Krishna properly. And so he gets very upset and he makes the point that it's not through external austerities or striving for purity that we can actually enter the Lord's pastimes. It is by intense eagerness to be with Krishna, to serve Krishna. This is the definition of pure devotional service. Anyabhilashidashaniyam gyanakarmadyanavritam anukalina krishna nushilanam bhakti uttama. The only thing that we want in our spiritual lives is to serve Krishna according to his desires. If we have an intense eagerness for that type of service, then he will place us in a situation that's favorable for our spiritual lives. So Lord Chaitanya, he came to preach that and to give us that knowledge. And then Srila Prabhupada mercifully came to the best and brought us this knowledge, this jewel of Krishna consciousness. Even though he was very old, he's never left India, and all the austerities that he has undergone to bring this knowledge to us, to the West, to all of us. On that note, I'd like to end. Is there any comments, questions, corrections? Thank you for pointing that out. It is, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita and also in Bhagavatam, it's stated that Krishna from within our hearts, he's taking away. That's why we don't have to strive for purity separately. Because if we practice devotional service, then Krishna is going to take those distractions away from us. Yeah. Thank you. Any more comments? Mm-hmm. Oh, you'd like to know who is Lord Chaitanya? Thank you. Lord Chaitanya is Krishna, and he came 500 years ago. He appeared in this world to reestablish religious principles. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, whenever religious principles are lost, he comes, descends, and again gives the process of pure devotional service, and again establishes religious principles. So 500 years ago, Krishna did that, and he descended, he came in the form of Lord Chaitanya, as a devotee. Like, he comes as a devotee to teach pure devotional service, and to specifically with focusing on chanting the holy names. Like, he starts the Sankirtan movement, the congregational chanting of the holy names, in order to awaken pure love of Godhead, which has been... message had been lost before. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, Lord Chaitanya, he actually let him stay in the kirtan later on, because yeah, he had a desire to be with the Lord, and then he was very humble, and he saw his humility, and then actually based on the humility, yeah, he gave him mercy later on. Yeah, thank you. Yes. Okay. Right. Yeah, thank you. It's a good question. I'm sure we all kind of encounter that, the lack of enthusiasm once in a while. Rupa Goswami and Srila Prabhupada, one thing they always point out is association of devotees. Just look for association of devotees that are more advanced, more enthusiastic. And they can. I think that's the most important thing. Just to get regular association of people, especially devotees that are very advanced and that are very absorbed in the practices of devotional service. And then you can see, oh wow, they're so enthusiastic. And let me try to... Also praying for it, I guess. Do you have some other ideas? From which perspective? From the devotee's perspective or from the other's perspective that are disturbed? I think what's important is the motivation. Like, of course, the devotee is trying to be enthusiastic, but then is the enthusiasm because they want to impress somebody, or is the enthusiasm really just because they want to genuinely serve Krishna? And I think that's just some reflection on that, really, why am I enthusiastic? And then also just acknowledging, you know, sometimes, I mean, especially if you live in a community like this, people will always be disturbed by things we do. You know, there's always, like, the mind's always there, and but it's like family. And also it's like, okay, somebody does something and stepping on the toe of the other person. It's like, okay, Hare Krishna, I know that happens. But then also maybe the envy that arises in the other people and the other person's heart, then that's something that the other person has to deal with themselves. And then, so it's not, I think there's several approaches here and several kind of layers. Yeah, I mean, if the person knows they disturb people by their enthusiasm, then maybe just kind of stay away. I don't know, but what do you think? Have you thought about this more? But then also I think it's a good lesson for everybody else who does become humble. Sometimes we see like young bhaktas and they're really enthusiastic, but they don't really know yet. Well, even us, yeah, we don't even know really what to do. But then like we may get so disturbed by certain externals of that devotee's performance. But then to really look, okay, how does Krishna see that devotee? Krishna actually sees the enthusiasm, he sees the endeavors. So maybe, you know, I can start to appreciate that also in this person. Even though maybe there's some, whatever, they seem to be a little over enthusiastic or something. But yeah, it's good, whatever works. Whatever enthusiasm you have, you know, it's great. Thank you. It's also one of the offenses against the holy names to preach the glories of the holy names of Krishna to somebody who is not ready for it. Thank you. Thank you. So this comes back again to the... Thank you. Thank you. It goes along with humility also. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gantalat Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Gaura Premanandam.